This is a Clark University podcast.
Yeah, I've always been interested in computers. I think my earliest memory was thinking as I played one of the early Pokemon games, how does this work? How does it know to move me around? What did they do to get this logic in there? And I had no idea how they could do that.
Do you remember what game it was that you played when you were a kid and what console?
Yeah, it was Pokemon Yellow, the Game Boy Color. And so as I learned about programming, I just found it so interesting how you can make the computer do what you want if you know what you're doing when you program it. As I was finishing my undergrad, I got interested in how do people experience computers? How do we help people make decisions that keep them secure? How do we not blame people for insecure behavior? How do we help people behave securely, building tools that are usable, giving people a good understanding of the security principles at play so they can make decisions properly. My general interest in computers turned into an interest in computers and people.
When computer science professor Peter Story talks about decision-making and reducing blame associated with computer usage, one thing he's referring to is called dark patterns, tools that keep users hooked on games, apps, or websites. Kat Andler, a professor in the Becker School of Design and Technology, also studies these manipulative tools. You've probably run into dark patterns on your phone without realizing it.
I've always been a geek. I've always been into video games, even back when, you know, it was Pong. I was very, very into it. Essentially, what a dark pattern is when the maker or designer of the website, app, or game is trying to deceive you, manipulate you, make you do something that you don't necessarily want to do. Click on something, sign up for something, and, you know, agree to some terms and things like that. But now the designers doing dark patterns have gotten so good at using psychology and visual design against us. It's about designing something so that the user does something you want them to do. It certainly can be used for good, but it is most likely used to sell a product or sign up for a membership and things like that. And we see it so often, it's become really part of our everyday lives, and it didn't used to be.
Peter and Kat introduce pattern recognition in their classrooms as students learn about the latest developments in technology.
So in my intro to societal computing class, I had an activity, and the first part of the activity was for people to test out mobile games and look for dark patterns. There's a lot of different types, like temporal dark patterns, trying to get you to use the app every day. There's monetary dark patterns, where they have an in-app currency, so you don't feel like you're spending money, even though you did. It's like Chuck E. Cheese tokens, but in apps. Then there's these social dark patterns, like you don't want to let your friends down. So something like Snapchat, they have this thing called the Snap Streak. They want you to use the app every day and send photos to your friends. So there's a few things working on this. So first there's loss aversion. If you break the Snap Streak, you lose it. You've lost something. You haven't really lost anything that should be important to you, but it feels important to you. There's also the social pressure, the social influence. You don't want to look like a bad friend for not sending them a photo today. Does this actually help people? Does this make people happier to be doing this? I think it just gets people to use the app more. That's a goal of a lot of app developers, is to keep users in the app for more time, even if it's not in the user's best interest. We had students look for all these things, and they were able to identify a lot of these because there's such an effective way of making money. As an app developer, you're leaving money on the table if you're not trying to basically exploit your users' weaknesses to the greatest degree possible.
That's really what it is about. We're getting people to do what we want them to do. And, you know, most of it's good. Some of it's not as good. In particular, things like in-app purchases. They're part of the game world, and we have to design them. But the difference is when a reputable designer or design studio put something together, they're going to be thinking about, they're going to make sure that you are informed, that when you're giving your consent for something, especially, you know, spending some money, that you know exactly what it is. Whereas like a true dark pattern has that evil intent behind it where it says, all right, we want to trick you into in-game purchases.
I'm Melissa Hansen, a producer in Clark's communications office, and this is Challenge Change. Reassuringly, there's a pattern rooted in encouraging positive decision-making. These are called light patterns, or nudges. Nudges can serve several purposes. In some cases, developers want to encourage people to protect themselves. Peter puts this strategy at the center of his recent research.
With a light pattern or a nudge, you're trying to help people do things that are in their best interest. People have busy lives. They can't be thinking carefully about every decision you make every day. So the idea is for people with authority to help people make the decisions that are in their best interest. I think a great example of this is saving for retirement. Something that is in general in everyone's best interest is to get the employer match. It's free money. If you don't get the employer match, you're just missing out on thousands and thousands of dollars every year that you could just be getting. What's called the default nudge is to opt people into that by default. If the employer doesn't do that, then a lot of people will forget about it and will miss out on a ton of money. So that's a powerful nudge, is the default nudge.
Other nudges provide tools for proactive organization and planning.
The protection motivation theory is one type of nudge, and I think there's a lot of strong evidence that that works well. So high quality information about what you want protection from and what you can do. So protection motivation theory gets its start in the medical field. The first study I'm aware of was helping people get vaccinated. Say that there's a vaccine drive on campus. Why doesn't every student go and get vaccinated? Maybe there's a lot of things that get in the way. Something you can do is you can explain the threat of the disease. So what that does is that increases people's perception of the threat severity and of the threat susceptibility. That then is getting people to believe in the efficacy of the response they can take. And then the final part is getting people to understand they can do it. And so then it's super clear what you can do to be protected and why you'd want to be protected. Another type that I studied in my research was called implementation intentions. And there's a couple varieties of these. The first is called action planning. And with action planning, you're helping people set a plan to take the protective action. So like, put it on your calendar, you're going to go on Thursday to get vaccinated. Figuring out the time and making that plan ahead of time, the idea is that this can get people to be more likely to take the protective action. Now in our research, this had a small effect. We didn't find it to be statistically significant, whereas protection motivation theory was statistically significant. My intuition is that implementation intentions add a little bit, but protection motivation theory makes a big difference. Fundamentally, all of these light patterns, these dark patterns, are based on an understanding of human psychology. And so if you understand how people make decisions, you can help them make decisions in one way or the other, to make you more money or to help the users live more fulfilling lives.
Apps and games are designed to pull us in myriad directions. CAT prepares students for careers where they will likely be asked to contribute to dark pattern design.
Where's the line where a company asks, could you design this? And they're like, oh yeah, I can design that. And all of a sudden you're in the middle of it and it hits you. Whoa, wait a second. I'm actually about to, you know, design something that's manipulative in a bad way. So what I do as a designer is I provide alternative, good versions of the design where it's very clear what they're supposed to be doing. And that's, of course, what I always tell my students to do. You know, if you're asked to do something and you realize that, wait a second, this, you know, could lead people down a path where they might not want to go, provide them with the good version. So, of course, that's what I push in my classes. I do a couple of assignments that are how to create a dark pattern. So we start off by recognizing dark patterns and then we actually design a dark pattern, but it's really so that they can focus on why it's bad. You have to know what's bad in order to avoid it for the future. They may not know the psychological principles behind them. You know, I start talking about Gestalt and they're like, bless you. And they, you know, they don't know what I'm talking about, but it's such a lively discussion. Pretty much on a daily basis, the class goes over time and I'm like, okay, I'm walking down the hall and people are still following me talking about it because, you know, it's something that brings out the passion in people. You know, because if you feel like you have been manipulated, you're going to be pretty upset about that.
With all this in mind, we wanted to know whether Peter avoids dark patterns or gives in to the temptation once in a while.
When I have time that I can spend on activities like leisure activities after work, I try to think like what's going to actually make me feel good about how I spend my time. I'd much rather play like an actual video game that's been designed for people's enjoyment, something that I download off Steam and paid money for, than playing a phone game. I feel more fulfilled by playing the game that's making an experience for the player as opposed to just squeezing money out of the player.
Sometimes it's easy to focus on the negative. Kat hopes to see more conversation about the positive attributes of design and gaming come to the forefront.
A lot of times research is used against our industry, but I actually look at it as it should be supporting our industry. I see so much good that comes out of the video game industry. And that's the thing is, I wish people would kind of focus a lot more on the good that's come out of the game industry. And I think it's a tremendous amount of good. We're not just shooting aliens and things like that. We're creating a substance. You know, some of the worlds that are created in some of the games are an absolute utopia. And, you know, let's strive towards that.
To learn more about computer science at Clark, visit clarku.edu/computer-science. Challenge Change is produced by Andrew Hart and Melissa Hansen for Clark University. Find other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
One, two, three.
Clark!